Okay, thank you. Okay, if you have that Bible reading, go ahead and open your Bible and let's just get ready to look at the text. And just one preaching tonight. And that doesn't mean it'll be any shorter, but but hopefully it means it'll be, you know, it will be a bit shorter. But let's get a, you know, let's just get a final blessing. You know, let's learn something. Let's get a principle that we can tuck away that we might need to pull out one day. And we'll remember, you know, I remember hearing that message on that thing. That's right. And so there is a value, I think, in gathering. It's been a... It is mine. Yep, thank you. Thank you. Did you drink some of that? I remember when I first got saved in 1975, I had grown up in a non-Christian family here, not too far from here. I don't recall in my life ever meeting any other Christians. I don't know if my mum and dad ever knew any, but I never came across that. My mum was one of six children. Her family was quite large. My dad was one of five. His family was large. Most of our gatherings were with family or friends, and the men would get a keg from the pub, and they'd stand around the keg and drink beer. And the ladies would sort of be off in their area. And the idea was that, you know, as children, you grew up into that. And so when you got to teenage years, you eventually made your way to the keg. And that was kind of like just, that was just how it went. And I didn't think much about that. That was just the only life I knew. And then when I was in my teens, through a series of events that I somewhat spoke to the other night, I met my first group of Christians, and I didn't really understand what they were, but I heard the gospel and to speed through it. It wasn't too long after that that I received Christ. I remember the day I became a Christian. And I, you know, nobody had prepped me about what you're supposed to feel. I'm not sure I really understood the theology of salvation. I don't know I could have articulated it very well. I just knew at that moment that I needed Jesus, and I was ready, and I wanted him, and I knew I was a sinner, and I believed the things that they'd said. And I remember praying for salvation, and a change came in my life very quickly. I used to swear and just sort of speak really coarsely, and that just dropped off. I don't remember ever reading a Bible verse that said I shouldn't do that, or I don't even remember anybody correcting me about that, but it just was something about when God got in me, things just started to change. I loved going to church. I remember when I got saved, there was some other people standing around, and nobody invited me to church when I got saved. And I got saved at a youth group. And so I heard some of the people talking about church, and they were asking some of the other kids, you know, would you like to go to church? And I was thinking, I'd like to go to church. And nobody asked me. And I kind of waited and nobody asked. And finally, I just kind of walked up and said, I'd really like to go to church. And they just went, yeah, okay, you could. How would I get there? We could have someone pick you up. When? And I just sort of persisted. And I got to tell you, I love church. I loved it from the beginning. I love being around God's people. I mean, I didn't call them that. I just called them Christians. And I loved the songs we sang, and I loved hearing from the Word of God, and I loved the feeling of just being around God's people. And I never knew such a thing existed in the world. I assume that Christians was just my church. I didn't even know there were other churches and other Christians, and I had no idea. That's generally how naive I was. But I was just thrilled to be saved. I had tremendous goodwill towards the people of God, the church of God, the things of God. As soon as I could, I found a Christian sticker and stuck that somewhere. I was so thrilled that I had found this thing. I remember one day somebody told me that there was a Christian bookstore in Elizabeth Street in the city. And I couldn't believe that Christians would have their own bookstore. I thought, it can't be. And they said, no. And I said, what's in there? And they said, well, there's books and all written about like Christian things. And I said, how many? And they said, oh, there's lots. You should go. And so I remember catching a train into the city, getting off at Central Station and walking down to Elizabeth Street and going to that place. And that bookstore was located on the third level. And you got into a lift that had sort of see-through doors. And it just sort of went across and it would go up. And depending which way you faced, you could see the wall of the building as you went up. And then eventually it opened. And what wonderment it was for me to step into the first Christian bookstore. I was astounded at the size of it. Now, it probably was no bigger than your lounge room. But to me, as I looked at all the books up high up on all the walls and the shelves that were there, I was just, as a teenager, I was just stunned that there could be this many books written about Christian things. And I loved that place. I'd sit on the floor and go through those books. I loved the smell of it. And I can remember that. And I'm just saying I had tremendous goodwill towards all things pertaining to being saved, to being a Christian. I just believe I had found the pot of gold of life. I'd found the best thing you could ever want. I had met the most amazing people that you would ever meet. People love me who hardly knew me. And I was just overwhelmed at all the goodness of this life and what it was like to be a Christian. And I was sold out right there and then. I was just certain that I just wanted to be around this and in this and of this all of my life. I remember going to a meeting as a teen and they taught us how we could pray for 1 hour. And I thought how wonderful that was. And so I learned how to pray for 1 hour. And I would go down and find a place. And as a 14-year-old, I'd pray for 1 hour. And I can remember just how good that felt. And I'm just saying I had tremendous goodwill and just wonderful belief in the local church, the people of God. I looked up to the pastor like they were just the most amazing people. I mean, it wasn't really a hero worship, but it was just like, you know, they were just incredible people who seemed to open the Bible and somehow, some way, they just knew what to say. And I never understood who was telling them about my life every week, but they would preach about it every week. And I felt so honored that every message was about me. It was that way. Unfortunately, those notions were going to be challenged. And I remember the first time I saw Christians fighting each other. And just how I was just flawed. My mind couldn't comprehend how you could reconcile that with who we were and who we were supposed to be. You say you were naive. Very. I just had no idea, and I was a little taken back by that. But It wasn't directly sort of happening to me, but I was, it challenged me about how can this be? And then I remember the year it happened to me. And it was 1983. And 1983 was the year that I had the first big event where there was fighting and accusations and nastiness and lies and all of these things starting to take place, deceit. And I was right in the middle of all that happening. And I got to say, it was just, it shocked me at multiple levels. I didn't understand even then how, I'd never seen that before. I didn't know that, you know, that had happened elsewhere in other places. I didn't know Christians did that. And I can remember just how disappointed, deeply, deeply disappointed I was at what I was seeing. I remember I couldn't sleep. I remember vomiting. I remember just tossing and turning. I remember crying. And I couldn't understand how can this be? When I read our text here in 1 Samuel 8, I see some disappointments. And I see it from some different levels. And most of you, regrettably, you already know a little bit about disappointments. Now, if you've been serving the Lord in ministry, you certainly know what it is to have some disappointments. And I want to just, you know, think a little bit about that. What is happening here is that Samuel, who, by the way, I greatly admire. He's all the Bible people are good and you can learn from all of them, but you tend to lean to some. Maybe you connect a little bit with some more than others. Samuel, for me, is just kind of someone I relate to a little bit, or I think I do. Samuel lived his ministry life by doing a circuit, and it tells us that in the Bible. There were essentially four cities or four areas that he went to. And he did that each year. He went to these four places. Samuel was very well known in Israel as being not just a prophet, but what they called a seer. And a seer was somebody who could tell you things about you. And a seer had an ability to know things. And they were greatly sought after. And they were respected and revered as being, you know, servants of God. And Samuel was one of those. Samuel had started his life from a child being in the midst of the things of God. And Samuel had just stayed with it. He had just kept going. He didn't get to his teenage years and outgrow his faith. He didn't get to his 20s or 30s and feel the need to, run off and find out other things about life and somehow push his faith to the rear. I mean, Samuel had just stayed with it. And he had a relationship with God, and it was unique. And God would tell him things. And not just answers to prayers, but God would tell him other things. And now you get to hear, and Samuel has children. They're named, two of them here. And we're told that he's old. Now, there's still a couple of things or some events are going to happen after this that the Bible will record and give us details about. But we can know that now he's old, and I don't know how it worked, but possibly he had a succession plan. And he realized, I'm getting older and I'm not going to be able to keep doing this the way that I've been doing it. And so what I'll do, I'll hand over to my boys. And as I've judged Israel, now they'll judge Israel. And I'm certain he would have encouraged the boys to do right. I'm certain that he would have given them an admonition about the seriousness of serving God and judging, being impartial and being led of God. And I'm sure they had all that. But, of course, that's not how it played out. And it's a disappointment when your children don't walk in your ways. It may be the greatest disappointment for a Christian mother and father. I've heard missionaries say, I could say who said it. And if I said who said it, he's with the Lord now, but you'd know the name. And I heard that missionary say, a man who preached in this church, he said, Brother Wayne, he said, I've led hundreds to Christ, maybe thousands, and I'm certain that was true. And in a shaking, quivering, broken, tearful moment, he said, and I'd let them all go to hell to just have my kids back. And I remember him saying that. Now, I don't know that, you know, in a calmer moment he really would think exactly that way, but it was clear the hurt and the pain he had and the profound disappointment in just how that had gone. And so Samuel's boys here do not do well. It says in verse number 3, his sons walked not in his ways. So we can know that there was not a problem with Samuel's living, because the Bible differentiates between the way the boys were acting and the way their dad had acted. And the Bible differentiates that what they were doing, this wrong thing, This abuse of the religious system, this abuse of an office of trust, this abuse of being in a place where God appointed you to represent Him to others, was not how their father had done things, because they walked not in their father's ways. And I don't want to go too far beyond the little the Scripture says, but I'm certain as a father there would be a profound sense of disappointment in Samuel's own heart about what was going on with his children. You know, the greatest joy your children can give you is when they walk with God. I mean, wouldn't you agree? You don't have to be a preacher. You don't have to be a pastor or a missionary. I just want you to walk with God. I just want you to be faithful to God. I just want you to keep Him first in your life. And son or daughter, whichever way God leads you is okay. I love you and accept you, whatever happens. I just want you to love God. And I think that's the greatest gift children can give their parents. There's such a joy in that. But the other side of that is that when that is not happening, it could be one of the worst things you go through. Not being able to sleep. You know, those quiet chats with your wife at night when you're alone. The questioning as you revisit your own life about, should I have done some things differently? You know, and suddenly you're going back over stuff. And the interesting thing with parents who just love their kids so much is that I'm not sure, children, if you'll understand this, but parents tend to blame themselves way more than they blame you. You're not walking with God, they take as a failure upon themselves. And they're never diminished in their love for you. They only ever wanted your best, but they're wrestling with that disappointment of just how that went. Now, if you have younger children, I would just say to you to really take heed to some of the preaching we've heard this week, some of the admonitions that came through the Word of God through Pastor Skelly. And I would also say to you to not be quick in judgment on others. I would say to you to be careful about thinking you know what somebody else did wrong. And because you're about to find out the difficulty of it as your children. Now, it could be that there was no fault at all here with Samuel. It is true that adult children make their own decisions. And you are not responsible for every decision your adult child makes for the rest of your life. Okay, that's them, that's not you. You taught them, you told them, you begged them, you prayed for them, you admonished them, you wanted their best. You're not responsible and you're not to be blamed for every decision that your adult children make. In the end, they're going to make their own decisions about what they do with God. But there's a disappointment, I'm sure, with Samuel. I'm going to show you another one in a moment. But there's also here a disappointment with the people. And the disappointment of the people is, you know, our leaders, the people we're looking to be, you know, the voice of God unto us, have lost their way. And the real problem here in verse number 3 was money. These boys, who were not boys, they were older, they were being bought off with money. And they gave in to the idea that if you were judging two people. Now, by the way, I come from a place where that happens a lot. And there are a lot of countries in the world where that happens all the time. And you say, really? Yes, really, all the time. And somebody will pay the decision maker, and then they will find a decision in favor of that person. And so these boys now they're just corrupting the whole system. And do you understand that God had given this, and God is sort of points to that a little bit further when he says, Samuel, they've rejected me. And there's no mention of them rejecting God in here. They asked for a king, right? They said, give us a king like all nations. You know, we need to do what everybody else is doing. And God said, what they're really doing, Samuel, is they're rejecting me. And they were rejecting God in the sense of, listen carefully, God had given a certain way that things were to be done. And everybody understood that. And the special people of God were not like everybody else. And God had given them prophets who would lead them and judge them like Samuel did. And these leaders of God would discern and know the words of God. And that was the system that God gave. Now there was no, listen carefully, there was no problem with the thing that God had given. That was not the problem. Okay, because when you get disappointed in something, there's a danger. And the danger is that when you go through a disappointment in a certain area, you question the whole system. So because you've been hurt, you believe everything needs to be changed. Because you had a bad pastor, something went wrong, you now believe we've got to get rid of that. You know, we need a plurality of elders. We've got to get rid of this one man thing. Or we need to be voting on everything. And just bring everything to the floor. You know, we need a democracy. And we can come up with all kinds of things that are contrary to how God has laid it out simply because we're hurt. Okay, because your marriage went wrong, all marriages are bad. You know, marriage doesn't work. Marriage doesn't work in our day. No, that's a reaction to your hurt. There's no problem with marriage. There's a problem sometimes with the people in the marriage, but there's no problem with marriage. God didn't get anything wrong. It all works good. It only doesn't work good when we don't do it the way God said. And if you just do what God said, you know, you just find it actually just works. But when we get hurt, you get disappointed. And I'm not making light of that, because these things can be very deep woundings. I mean, just floor you, just shock you, just devastate you. Make you ask questions about things you never asked before. And challenge your belief that anything good can even be in this. And that's what was happening here. You know, disciplining your children is not wrong because someone abused the child. You know, because the media found someone who went crazy, out of control, nutty, and, you know, and hurt a child, damaged a child, and they lift that up and say, well, this is what happens, you know, when you discipline a child. No, there's nothing wrong with disciplining your children. And remember this. Discipline is not something you do to a child. Discipline is what you do for a child. That you do it for them. You don't do it to them. You do it for them. You help them. But what will happen is there'll be an abuse of a situation and you want to throw it all out. Someone betrayed your trust, you know, and you're still reeling from that right now. That betrayal of trust. And how far you went with that person and how much you believed in them and how much you were willing to do for them. And then, you know, they took that and just trampled over it and betrayed your trust. And now that that's happened to you, you think, well, I'll never trust anybody again. Well, look, it's not a problem with trusting people. You went through a situation where there was hurt and damage. But that's not a reason that you change everything. So can you see that because of their disappointment, they go to Samuel and they say, look, this, you know, we had a meeting. That's what it says. The elders came and got together and they had a meeting. And then after they had a meeting, they went to Samuel and Ramah and said to him, we've had a meeting your kids, your boys, you pick them. You know, they're taking money from people. They're corrupting the whole system. They're causing everybody to even question the justice and the validity of having God lead us this way. You know, your kids. And so we want a king. We want to change the system. And I want to warn you against your natural reaction to want to change things because you got hurt in it. Are you listening? Don't be this foolish. Separate your hurt from what is still right and what is still wrong. Step back from it and yes, you're hurt and yes, you're wounded and yes, this has been the worst thing you've ever gone through, but be really careful. We're suddenly coming up now with new theology and improving on God's ways. And all you're doing, you're speaking through your hurt. And it doesn't work anyway. And so that was going on here. So the people were disappointed. But God made it clear what they were doing was not the answer. Now, I suspect for Samuel, there was another disappointment. And I'm sure he felt, or I suppose he felt, when the elders came to him and said, you know, your kids, you know, they're not did right, and you put them in there. I'm sure he must have felt that what was happening here was kind of selective memories. I don't know if you've ever had that where someone forgets all the good. But they never forgot one bad thing you did. You did 1,000 things good for someone. You did all this stuff, but all they can remember is the one thing or the two things that you did wrong. And there's tremendous disappointment when you love people and you try to help people and you do things for people and you gave money and you cared and you went when nobody else went and you were there for them when nobody else was there. And, you know, they seemingly at that time, they appreciate it, but then something happens where their memory becomes quite selective. And then all they want to talk about is the hurt. And I wonder if Samuel thought, well, fellas, okay, but what else did I do for you? You know, over the last 60 years, what else did I do? Okay, you critique me about who I chose, and I'll carry that. But there is a little more to the story. And I want to warn you against having a selective memory with people and suddenly forgetting all the good that somebody did for you. You know, the danger is when you get hurt, listen carefully, hurt has a way of rewriting history. Hurt goes back and revisits everything that happened before and rewrites what really happened. And hurt goes back, and all hurt sees is that everything was bad. And it magnifies the bad and passes over the good. And that's unjust. And that's not fair. And it's not even helpful to you to remember things that way. You need to be able to say, even in hurt or disappointment, look, you know, this is hurtful, this is hard. Look, I can remember, and I should remember these other good things that all took place. You know, go back and have an accurate revisiting of your own history when you put hurt on the side. And just look at it in fairness, because the danger is that you'll get hurt and suddenly you're rewriting your own history. You know, all you can remember is what, you know, mum did wrong or dad did wrong or the preacher did wrong or that person in the church did wrong. That's all you remember. And, you know, you betray yourself when you do that because you're not being honest with yourself. You don't help you when you do that. You need to be able to be balanced and look at that. And I guess it is disappointing when people have selective memories. You know, I've carried people out of slums. I've gone into places that I was warned not to go. Don't do it. A foreigner should never go into a place like that. I've gone into places where the Thais wouldn't go. I remember handing over my phone, handing over my wallet and walking in there to rescue someone. And I remember that. And I remember picking up someone soaked in vomit and dragging them out to the car, being in an area I shouldn't have been at, and taking them to my house and putting them on my sofa and feeding them food and washing them down. And sitting with them when they were shaking and just, I mean, all of that. I remember going to people who had no future, nothing. There was nothing ahead of them. There was nothing hopeful. There was nothing that was ever going to happen in their life that was good. And I remember going and loving people and giving of myself and emptying my wallet and giving it all. Time and time again, and taking people into our home. And when it was full, you know, my young son Curtis was 8 years old, bringing back someone to the house. And I said, look, the only bed is the one Curtis is on, but you could probably just share that with him. And just doing stuff that you just gave it all and you sacrificed. And it's incredibly hurtful when you've lived a life like that of giving and helping and caring and doing things and someone just wants to pass over all that like it didn't happen or it really didn't mean that much. And I just wonder if there's a danger, we do that to the Lord sometimes. I just wonder sometimes if we forget what we were. If we just forget where God found us. And if we just wonder what you might have been if God had just left you to yourself. You know, and the danger is if you forget what you are, you will go back to where you were. If you forget what you were, that's where you go back to. And you need to, you know, I just wonder if we do that with the Lord sometimes, where it's getting hard. And our memory becomes a little selective. I've seen missionaries complaining about the hardship on the field and just talking about all they did and how hard it was. And I think, well, you know, it was sort of hard for Jesus too. You know, like buying your salvation was sort of hard too. You know, I mean, you know, being spat upon and having your face bloodied and having people mock you and you know, hang you up naked. I mean, you know, when we talk about he bore our shame, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about that he was shamed. We're talking about that it was shameful what happened to him. But it should have been you. It should be your shame. All your sin should be pulled out there. And you should live in shame. But he did all this for us. And I just wonder sometimes if we lose sight of that and maybe even think we're really helping the Lord. I don't think we'd say it that way, but you know, remember all that I do for you. And he does remember it. But let's just remember. And I guess there was some hurt here with Samuel. There are some people in your life that you owe your loyalty to. You owe them. If they do nothing else, you owe them. There are some people you owe to love them. If they do nothing else ever for you ever again, they've done some things that demands your loyalty and demands your love. And you better be clear in your mind who those people are. You better know who they are. Because, you know, you go across to 1 Samuel chapter 23, and I won't turn there, but David hears that the city of Keilah is being assailed by the Philistines. And you can read it, but he goes to help them. And he delivers them from, you know, certain death and certain, you know, the loss of everything. And, you know, how good does it feel to be rescued? You know, people kiss their rescuers, no matter what they're like. I mean, just to be rescued. It's just so wonderful, and you just feel so grateful, and you know, you would think that they ought to have been that way with David, and David was there, and if you read the whole passage, word comes to Saul that David is at Keilah, and Saul thinks to himself, I've got him. He's going to be locked up in that place, and I've been trying to hunt him down, and now I can go after him. And word comes to David that Saul is going to come. And he is going to come after him in Keilah. Now, hang on. You understand where he is? He's with a whole bunch of people that he rescued them. He saved their life. He saved their children. He saved men from seeing their wives raped and carried away and pulled along by their hair, their daughters. He saved them from that happening. And he's there amongst them. And you might think that the people of Keilah would have said, you know, we really owe David. Mate, if you did that for me, I'm going to be there for you. And I'm there. And when he finds out Saul is coming, he gets the ephod and he asks, he discerns the, the mind of God. And he says, you can read it in 1 Samuel 20, he said, Lord, when Saul comes, will the people of Keilah deliver me up? Do you understand the question? Will they just hand me over? And it's kind of sobering reading. Go and read it sometime, you know, when you get home tonight. And you know, God says, they will deliver you up. I mean, you sort of hate some of the answers sometimes. I hate praying about some things in case God answers. I really do. I sort of don't want to know. I just don't want to know. Because, listen to me, because the pain of knowing sometimes, it's just hard to bear. Thank God for everything he ever hid from you. Yeah, amen. Yeah, I was not saying people, I said God. When God said, you don't need to know about that. I don't need to tell you that. Be glad for everything you don't know. And so he says, will they deliver me up? And God says, they will deliver you up. And I just think about that. And I think about the disappointment of helping someone like that. And risking your own life for another. And taking your resources and committing them not in your own fight, but for the well-being of another. And doing all of that and thinking, well, surely, you know, I don't ask you to fall at my feet, but surely you would remember. Surely you'd remember. And then to have it happen where it's like, you know, I'll discard you like nothing even happened. I mean, it says something about humanity, doesn't it? And if you're a preacher, you've had similar things in a church. If you're a missionary and you've reached people, you've had some of this happen. I know you have. And I know. And I know the pain of that. I know, because we like to romanticize it that, you know, the missionary goes and he gives his all and he gives his substance, he gives his health, he gives his life, he gives his prayers, he lays it all down. He takes his family and puts them on the line. And we like to tell the story of how the nationals were reached and God did an incredible work in their life and changed their lives, and it's kind of all good at that point, and we just want to say full stop. Wasn't that a great story? But there's a little more to the story sometimes. And sometimes the appendix to the story is that some of those people apparently thought very little of what you did or have forgotten it, or their heart has been taken over by something else. And Samuel had that disappointment as well. And I'll finish with this, but if you look in 1 Samuel chapter 9, so you'd be over one chapter. 1 Samuel chapter 9 is one of my favourite chapters in the Bible. I mean, it's all good, it's all God's word, but I particularly like this because it's rich with principles about how God leads somebody to something. And I won't preach that tonight, but it's all the way through. But what happens here is in the end, God says, well, Samuel, you know, tell them what I said, that if they have a king, what's going to happen? And they say, we don't care, we want one anyway. And so life goes on for a little bit, and some things are happening at the same time. Samuel is not aware of what God is doing. And that's okay. There are many times God doesn't tell us and he doesn't have to tell us. But there are things happening in the life of Saul, who at this point is nobody. He's the son of Kish. He's just a bloke, right? He's got a dad who's got a farm. And his dad says to him, son, some of the donkeys have run off somewhere. And, you know, you need to go find them. Take one of the servants and go. This is a very routine sort of thing that would have happened in the day when you had the farm. So Saul is out there, but the plan of this is that God is using those events in Saul's life to bring him to the place where he's going to intersect Samuel, who's going to confirm to him that Saul, you are the choice of God for this. And if you read it, what you find is that when God begins to reveal this to Samuel in chapter 9, in verse number 16, tomorrow, about this time, I will send thee a man out of the land of Benjamin, and thou shalt anoint him to be captain over my people Israel. The next verses are the reason, the next verses tell you what the ministry of Saul was supposed to be. Are you listening? The next part tells you why God picked him and what he was supposed to do. And what you'll find out, well, you know already, he didn't do what he was supposed to do. What he was supposed to do, that he may save my people out of the hand of the Philistines, for I have looked upon my people because their cry is come unto me. So God said, I've picked a man and I've chosen him to lead and rescue the people, to save the people. And Saul did not stay focused on that mission at all. So God tells Samuel, now if you read on, here's what you find. Even though Samuel was hurt at their rejection, which God said, no, mate, really, it's me they're rejecting, not you. Samuel says, all right. Even though he was sort of part of the reason how they got to this, here's what he does. He embraces the vision of God. He doesn't do it reluctantly. He's excited about it. And it's like, well, okay, if this is the plan, this is the plan. You know, if that's what we're going to do, that's what we're going to do. And you read on and he has a feast. And I mean, he's backing this. He's, you know, there's a kinship already between Samuel and Saul, because Samuel's looking at it like, Saul, you're the one. God picked you. And, you know, isn't it great? I love him and you love him, and we both get the mission. We know what needs to be done. And isn't this fantastic? And don't have all your self-doubts. You can do it. You know, and God's going to give you everything you need. And they have a banquet there. And verse number 22, Samuel tells the cook, you know, put him in the best seat. You know, put him in the best chair. And then when Saul is seated, Samuel sends a word into the kitchen. In verse 23, you know, bring the piece I told you to keep for him. I mean, the choicest cut. And so it comes out. And verse 24, he sets it before him. And says, you know, eat, this has been kept for you. And it's kind of a picture of, this is your portion, this is what God chose. And chapter 10, verse number 1, Samuel takes the oil and pours it on his head and kissed him. And it's just a, you know, is it not because the Lord hath anointed thee to be captain over his inheritance? There's an excitement in participating in God calling somebody to do something, and you get to be a part of it. And God is using you in the process to help this person do what they're going to do for God. Hello, missionary, pastor, youth leader, you know. And it's exciting. And I can see God's call on your life. And I'm in all the way as well. I'm in with you. And that's how it all started. And then, you know what needs to happen. You get to chapter 15 and everything goes horribly wrong. And I have a message on what went wrong with Saul, but you know, just sufficient to say a lot went wrong. And it all, here it is again. Here he is, here's Samuel again. It's all blown up again. Look, I put everything into this. You know, I prayed. I gave. I went out on a limb for you. I showed the people I back you. You know, I used my credibility to elevate you. I did that. I believed in you. And he does all of this only for it all to just go horribly, horribly wrong. And, you know, what do you feel? I already know what you feel, right? This message is not academic for me. And it's not academic for anyone in the ministry. And it's not academic for any missionary. You know what that feels like. You know how it just floors you. You know, it just feels like a gut punch. You know what it's like to weep. My wife and I know what it's like to be awake on the mission field and not be able to sleep all night because we're crying and holding each other on the bed while we cry into each other. And we're not crying over ourselves. We're crying over that brokenness of just stuff that happens. And there's nothing quite like it. It's one of the worst things. It happened. It happens to Samuel. And so in verse 34 of chapter 15, we read, and I'm about done. Verse 34 of chapter 15. Then Samuel, after having telling Saul, it's done, you've done what you've done. Samuel went to Ramah and Saul went up to his house in Gibeah of Saul. And here it is. And Samuel came no more to see Saul until the day of his death. I mean, that's awful. That's just awful. What do you think the old man is just feeling? I know what he's feeling because God's going to speak to him in a minute. I know what he's feeling. And he's feeling like this is just like a death. This is just like a death. And he's deeply upset, and it's just been a tremendous disappointment for him. And then, by the way, Paul had that. Demas hath forsaken me. No. Mate, he was with you all the time. What happened? Having loved this present world, something in the world got him. It got hold of his heart. It got hold of his head. Was it a her? Was it money? Was it like a business thing? Was it prestige? Was it recognition? Was it being with the right crowd? Something got him. Something got him, and he chose to walk away from the greatest Christian who ever set foot on the earth and abandon him and leave him to his fate. Demas hath forsaken me. And you do ministry long enough and you'll have a Demas. And if you haven't had that, I really hate to say that to you. Jesus said, "Did I not choose you 12 myself? And one of you is a devil." And there's probably scarce worse things that can take place in the life of a minister, a missionary, a ministry person than to have this. And what was Samuel feeling, Brother Shemesh? Well, he was feeling what you felt when that happened to you. He's feeling what some of you are feeling tonight. How bad was it? He was debilitated. What do you mean? I mean, he was just not able to go forward. He wasn't doing anything. It was such a gut punch that he just... His wife said, "Samuel, have something to eat. I'm not hungry." "Honey, we've been through worse before. We'll get through this." Mm-hmm. "Love, you've got to stop thinking about this." Mm. And it was just debilitating. And so God comes in chapter 16 and verse number 1. Now, there was a time period where God allowed him to go through that process. It wasn't instant. But the time came where God said, are you listening to me, missionary, preacher, the top parent? The time came where God said, okay, it's enough. Now it's enough. Okay. Okay, I know you're hurt. I know what you feel. I'm not minimizing your pain. But Wayne, it's enough. It's enough. And he worded it this way. How long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Do you know what God does? God demands, when it comes to people and how you look at people, that you will be in alignment with how he looks at it. He demands of you that you are to look at this how I'm looking at it. Okay, you do not have a right to have your own view on that when it's contrary to mine. And Samuel, it's enough. How long will you do this? Okay, I have made a decision here and it's done. Okay, now get up and go and do what you do, because you're mine and I called you. And go fill your horn with oil and go out there and speak for me and do my work and follow my leading and walk on, because it is not my will that you allow this to paralyze you and debilitate you and stop you from serving and stop you from trusting again and stop you from going on for the Lord. That's not my will. And I will give you grace to deal with your disappointment. But I insist that you get up and get your oil and go do my work. And that's what he said. And that's what he said. And you might do it with a heavy heart. And you might do it that every now and then your mind flicks back to all that. Get up and go and do the work of God, because you belong to him. Let's have a word of prayer. Let's go ahead and stand tonight. Let's just bow. I wonder tonight how many would honestly say, I just felt the Lord said something to me tonight that I need to take hold of. Is that you? Would you be honest and, you know, is that you? Let's go ahead and take some time to pray. The piano's playing. The altar is open. It's our final night of conference. It might be a memorable time where you're going to say, I remember the night I took that to the Lord. I remember the night I laid it down. I remember the night the Lord visited me about that. I remember the night where it was just almost like, that's my story. And the Lord just came and helped me. I remember the night I got a peace about it. And I was just able to move on. That's not about forgetting anyone. It's not about not caring. It's not about not praying, but it's about going on and doing the thing the Lord would want you to do. I hope you pray for your missionaries and those who are serving. I really, really do. Because they're often going through things that you may not fully understand. You might wonder why they couldn't just sort of discard that and keep going. But could you discard a child? Would you do that with one of your own? I hope you pray. I hope you pray. Some tonight that you've beat yourself up about your children way too long. And you just need to just have some peace about that. That's in God's hands. And you know, you can't control every decision they make. And maybe you didn't fail at everything you keep thinking you failed at. And actually, this is sort of happens to lots of people. And you just need to get a peace, you know. The Lord just wants to help you with that. And whatever it is, let's just take a moment to pray and then... when we're done, Pastor will come and we'll have a song. God bless you. I really pray that the Word of God would just really be lodged in your heart tonight. I pray that some of these principles, if you never have to draw this for yourself, you may have to draw it for another one day. You may be the comforter that the comforter is using for another, and you might need to call on this.